solid. With Be Brave 13 as narrator.
Black Glass as Hen.
Devil with a Bird Dress as Karen.
B13, maybe this time, as Tony.
Summary. The first time she had seen a photograph of Hen from before 2010, she'd been stunned to silence. Somehow, in her mind, Henrietta Wilson had stepped onto the earth with her head shaven and her chin held high. A law of nature as undeniable as Newton's first, at once the immovable object and the unstoppable force. Hen Wilson held open doors and pressed her into countertops. Hen Wilson called her on her bullshit and listened solemnly when she was corrected. Hen Wilson was unapologetically herself and made Karen want to rise to meet her there. Henrietta Wilson did not slouch around in flamingo pink prom dresses. Karen ruminates on who her wife was, who she is, and the connection between the two. On Fridays, she has to attend a research faculty meeting for 2 hours after her office hours end, because getting off at work at 3 p.m. would have been too much of a luxury for the department to let stand. She can count on one hand in her years here the time she has been addressed directly in this meeting, but she doesn't usually begrudge attending anyway. Learning from other people's mistakes is a great way to avoid learning from her own, and the arcane regulations some of her colleagues have been chewed out for violating are a surprise to even her, often enough to make sitting through the long, dull reading of announcements and complaints about overuse of copier paper worthwhile. From there, it's 3 minutes back to her office, 2 to toss down her special for the meeting binder, sparse notes today, and snatch up the thesis chapter she had promised to get back with edits by Monday to a teary grad student the day before, and only a few seconds to turn out the lights and lock up. Which means, since the meeting always runs long, that her phone buzzes twice in her hand as she tucks her keys into her purse. She hasn't let her texts display on her lock screen since Denny learned to read, so she has to juggle her coffee cup and the stack of printed paper into one hand and her phone into the other so she can thumb it open and read the texts from Hen.
Hey, pretty girl. How was work?
She pauses in the stairwell just long enough for a frantic-looking undergraduate to dart around her and sprint down the steps so quickly that she reflexively bellows,
"Walk!"
after him, in a tone usually reserved when Denny and Mara are chasing each other around a pool. His footsteps stutter, and slow enough that she feels more confident about the safety of the precision instruments used in whatever evening lab class he was late for, though she doesn't feel too bad about it, only shaking her head once in distaste before her attention returns to her phone.
"I got a very lost animal science major in my office for advising,"
she types, taking a couple steps down the stairs before remembering a horror story from her wife's work and hooking her elbow onto the banister for stability, since she didn't have a hand free. Good enough.
"I thought you didn't do advising. Definitely not animal science, at least."
Hen was responding quickly. On days she was working, these little check-ins were brief, spread out over hours, and often came in late enough that her car had to read them out to her as she waited in traffic. Hen's off today, though. Has been home since 8 in the morning. It was one of the rare, luxurious weekends where Hen didn't work the whole time, and Tony was free to take the kids, and Karen didn't have any pressing deadlines on Monday. Hen has been texting her all day, mostly pictures of completed household tasks that had been put off all week, but the check-in was never missed, nearly ritualistic ever since the lab explosion. Well, she doesn't have any deadlines other than the thesis chapter, but she's already marked up all but the last 3 pages, and she has plans to power through those while dinner was in the oven or on the stove or whatever it was. When she asked about dinner earlier that day, Hen had called it a surprise, which could mean anything, honestly.
"I don't,"
she types out just before pushing open the door and emerging into the sunlight to start her hike to her car.
"But that was the second punchline. Stop reading ahead. Anyway, he was in the wrong building, but the right room number. I'll tell you more about it tonight."
Henry acts to her second message with a heart before she can put her phone away and start the car.
I promise to laugh anyway. How does that happen?
Her wife asks, and then a photo comes through.
By the way, look what Buck found today.
It's a photo of a photo, because no matter how many times Karen walks Hen through scanning documents with her phone, she's never going to get it. Which is fine, because it means that on the rare occasion that Hen does need to scan something, Karen gets to do it instead, which prompts Hen to drop a grateful kiss on her head and wax poetic about her genius wife for a moment or two. It's a very equitable arrangement, by Karen's reckoning. Through the glare on the glossy photograph in the picture, Karen can see her wife. Younger, less confident, but Hen. It's a photo from her training. She's in a civilian clothes, so it must be very early. She sits in a classroom, sporting her short, bobbed wig, a muted blue dress, and a pair of sensible heels. She isn't smiling. Karen's heart clenches.
Oh my god.
She responds, because she can't think of anything else to say.
Where did he dig that out of?
She doesn't think about it again until half an hour later when, driving 5 miles an hour in a 45 through traffic, her mind wanders. The first time she had seen a photograph of Hen from before 2010, she'd been stunned to silence. Somehow, in her mind, Henrietta Wilson had stepped onto the earth with her head shaven and her chin held high, a law of nature as undeniable as noon's first, at once the immovable object and the unstoppable force. Hen Wilson held open doors and pressed her into countertops. Hen Wilson called her on her bullshit and listened solemnly when she was corrected. Hen Wilson was unapologetically herself and made Karen want to rise to meet her there. Henrietta Wilson did not slouch around in flamingo pink prom dresses. There it had been, though, in the bright color on the page of the scrapbook Tony showed her. The visit had been the first of a series of increasingly chilly peacemaking expeditions in the wake of their engagement, where Tony tried to pretend that she had come to terms with her daughter's lifestyle, and Hen tried to pretend she believed her, and Karen did her best not to shove Hen safely out of the room and scream and scream and scream at Tony. Hen, across the room, must have seen something on her face in reaction to the picture, because in an instant she was at Karen's side, chuckling at it herself.
Yeah, I decided that wasn't my color pretty quick,
she said, eyes scanning the photo. Someone who spent less time staring at her than Karen probably wouldn't have noticed the subtle tension in her proud shoulders. Apparently her mother was among these, because Tony sighed deeply, wistfully.
Nonsense,
she said, sharper than Karen expected.
You looked so beautiful. I just wish I knew why.
She trailed off, clicked her tongue. Karen's hands found the inside of Hen's elbow, like her hand could protect the tender flesh from her mother's barbed speech, or hold Hen back from picking at the space after Tony's words, peeling it back until she snagged herself on the razor blades underneath. Hen's hand came up to cover hers, but it was too late.
Knew why what, Mom?
Karen closed her eyes.
I don't know,
Tony started, hesitatingly.
I'm learning to be okay with the whole les, with you liking girls. You were never happy in sales. I'm proud that you're doing so well as an EMT.
Paramedic,
Hen corrected shortly, pulling away from Karen.
Thanks.
I just don't know why you dress. I mean, I know it's more of a physical job, but you're not there all the time. I just wish I knew why you don't try anymore. It's like all of a sudden being a woman is beneath you or something.
Okay.
Karen cut in.
Well, she is a woman, so I don't see that she has to try to be one.
You know what I mean.
Tony entreated. Karen glanced wildly to Hen, and her stomach dropped, because standing there, arms crossed, eyes empty, was the girl from the photograph. Karen realized she was shaking in rage a moment later.
Baby,
she said, trying to keep her voice even.
Could you go start the car? It's kind of cold.
Hen left without another word, leaving Tony and Karen alone in the room. Tony tried to start a conversation a few more times, tone wheedling but unapologetic, but Karen kept her eyes out the window, one hand tenderly covering the girl in the prom photo from her mother's view, as if she could take the shrapnel for her too. Tony had eventually come around in a real way, done the work, and emerged understanding, and Hen had welcomed her back into their lives with open arms, at a distance at first. Karen had forgiven her too, for Hen's sake, and later for the children's sake, and finally because she realized that Tony didn't deserve her iciness, not anymore. Karen can't shake it, though. The feeling of looking over at Hen in that moment, and in a dozen more afterwards, culminating in the day of their wedding. It keeps her up at night still, sometimes. When she sees pictures of Hen from before her graduation from the Fire Academy, it comes back to her like she's still sitting in Tony's living room, laminated paper under her hand. Which is actually an improvement, because it used to be that those pictures inspired in her dual relief and retrograde anxiety, too. The fact was that, for a while, Karen had thanked every star she knew the name of, which was a fair few, that she had met the Hen Wilson who had already become who she was meant to be. A couple months after the interlude in Tony's house, Karen had sat bolt upright in her hotel bed at an academic conference, sweating, thinking about what would have happened if Hen Wilson circa 2008 had been who'd walked into that cocktail bar. Hen's distinctive clothing, her easy sprawl across her chair, the way her eyes had locked onto Karen's and held steady, like she already knew her inside and out, that had been what had stopped Karen in her tracks, made her sit up and pay attention. They had had their problems since, but would she have brushed right out of that blind date if it had been a younger Hen there, one who looked different? Would she have even recognized that she was throwing away the best thing that had ever happened to her? It was a silly, irrational fear. Hen was who she was because she was a paramedic, and it was only by becoming a paramedic that she had met Chimney, and it was only by her knowing Chimney that they had been introduced. Still, it was a pet anxiety, like her friends asking their partners what they would do if they were bitten by a zombie. Karen didn't care about that what-if scenario, but this one she worried at in her head until one day, home with the flu and having devolved to flipping idly through Hen's tagged images on Facebook in chronological order, she realized. It wasn't like Hen had undergone a metamorphosis, completely burned through the elemental particles of her girl skin and become her wife. Just as she had seen the hurt girl in Hen that day in Tony's house, she could see Hen as she was now, periodically entering the room to take her temperature by kissing her forehead and tickling her side until she acquiesced to drinking more electrolyte solution. In those old pictures. The glimpses were fleeting, but there, a jaw set too tightly in a photo where a man's arm was draped carelessly over her shoulders, a photo or two where she forgot herself and sat knees apart, shoulders loose, the same way that had caught Karen's eye that first day. And suddenly, she knew, with the same quiet, bone-deep certainty that she had known herself to be a lesbian in the 9th grade, that she would know her wife in any shape she took. It wouldn't have mattered if pharmaceutical rep Hen had been who was at that blind date. Her growth into herself was inevitable as the pull of gravity, and Karen would have felt the tug of her orbit blind. Karen realizes, pulling into their driveway, that she can't actually remember a thing about her commute. She had been so lost in thought. She grimaces a little, getting out of the car, but wipes it off her face as she opens the door to the smell of a candle and the sight of their living room, ornamented by Hen, sitting on the couch with her nose in a book and her brow drawn. Karen tosses her keys into the bowl by the door and squeezes into the space beside her and under her arm.
"You've had a productive day,"
she says fondly, and Hen drops her head onto Karen's shoulder and sighs deeply, like Paisley used to right before dropping off to sleep.
"Well?"
Hen starts instead of lapsing into puppy snores.
"Dinner should be out in about half an hour. And then I have plans to have a productive night, too."
She waggles her eyebrows, and it's lame, but Karen's heart still stutters in her chest, even as she cringes back dramatically.
That was so bad,
Karen admonishes.
You wouldn't be getting anything with that if I was anyone else.
Good thing I don't want anyone else,
Hen says easily. And sometimes Karen still wonders at how, with this much distance and processing and long, hard conversations, she believes her. Without question, enough to smile back at her, silly, before remembering herself.
Okay,
she says.
I need to finish reading this chapter for one of the kids, and you need to keep your hands to yourself until I'm done,
she says sternly.
What do I get out of it?
Hen asks, joking, but Karen feels swept up in the playful air of the evening, and also, after her train of thought in the car, she really wants to see her wife smile. So she waggles her eyebrows, too.
My undivided attention for the rest of the weekend,
she promises. And when Hen bursts into laughter, loud and carefree, she joins in. The end. Thank you for listening.